This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Space, the final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission to explore strange new worlds. To boldly go where no one has gone before.
Engage. Enterprise.
This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Captain Catherine Janeway.
Captain Sisko.
This is Captain Jonathan Archer.
Red alert.
Photon torpedoes, fire.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Engage.
Make it so.
With your host, Jordan Hoffman.
That, sir, is illogical.
And make sure history never forgets.
This is Engage.
Failing frequencies open, sir.
And hello, everybody. Hello and welcome to Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. I am your host, Jordan Hoffman. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Jay Hoffman. With us, as always, is Brian. How you doing, Brian?
Doing good, Jordan.
And we just watched episode 108. And it's the one with the big Latin name. It means if you want peace, prepare for war. What is it in Latin?
Civis Pacem Parabellum.
Nice.
I think that's how it's pronounced. I mean, don't quote me on that.
Well, nobody knows how you pronounce Latin.
That's
because
true.
It's a dead language. Nobody really knows. There's no such thing as a Latin accent. Did you take Latin in high school?
I did not. I took Spanish in high school, and I took Japanese in college, and I don't remember a word of any of it.
Oh, Japanese, huh? That's pretty cool.
At the time, I thought so, too, but like I said, I don't remember any of it.
Yeah. I took French. Mais oui. Je comprends. Je parle français un peu.
See, you retained something. There you go.
Oui, un peu. All right. So, listen, we got the new episode here, and it's exciting. We're going to do a little recap, as we always do. But before we do, I just want to let you know, Brian, and I know you were trying to be there, but, you know, life got in the way. There was a big event this past weekend kicking off. I just want to give a shout out to our friends at the Liberty Science Center in Jersey City, New Jersey, and let listeners know that between now is November of 2017 and late May of 2018. I think it ends on like the 28th of May. I might have the exact date wrong, but there is a wonderful exhibit. It's the traveling exhibit for Star Trek. It's called the Starfleet Academy Experience. It was in Manhattan at the USS Intrepid, and we did some recordings from that early in Engage's history. That's when we spoke to our friend George Takei, and we spoke to the astronaut Massimo, I think is his last name, Massimino. He goes by Mass, you know.
Yes.
Guy. He goes, "Hey, I'm Mass. I'm an astronaut." And it was in Ottawa, Canada, and it was in Calgary, Canada. But now it's back in the good old USA. Which is Jersey City. It's funny, Jersey City and the Intrepid are like on a map as the crow flies, like inches away from each other. So this exhibit can only go to Canada and within a 2-mile radius of New York and New Jersey. So, you know, for fans that are maybe in Texas or, you know, Illinois or whatever. Yeah, West Coast, it's a little bit annoying. But anyway, the point is it's from November through to next May. It's this exhibit. It's really fun. And it's also part of the Liberty Science Center, which is a state-of-the-art science museum. You know, lots of cool stuff. Very family-friendly, but also they have a lot of cool things for adults. And they have, once a month, they have something called Liberty Nights, it's called.
Yes, and, my wife actually goes to that regularly.
Yeah. No, I met the gal who runs it as part of this event. And so they have, you know, evening mixers and whatnot. I should point out, it's in a beautiful location. It's in Jersey City, right on the water near, you can see the Statue of Liberty, which is actually closer to New Jersey than it is to New York. And you get the view of all of Lower Manhattan. It's very easy to get to if you live in New York, if you take the, you know, there's buses and trains, and there's even, a you know, the PATH train. So there was a gig on the weekend where we kind of kicked it off, and there was a party, and we did... You know, we did kind of the usual stuff we do at the conventions. We did our trivia, and you know, the spelling bee, we did that again. And you know, we had some guests, and it was great to see a lot of the listeners. I saw our friend, you know who showed up, and I didn't realize it was him until he was on the stage, because he did the trivia, and he won the trivia, actually. He won the grand prize. Jonathan Q, who was one of our fans. Yeah, he was there with his little boy. And I'm like, are you who I think you are? You're Q. And I told the audience, like, this guy's name is Q. It's not spelled Q, but it's Q. So he was there. And, you know, we did semifinal rounds and then finalists. And he won the grand prize. So that was pretty cool.
Well, congratulations to him.
Yes, congratulations. And our friend Michael Nguyen, I hope I'm pronouncing his last name wrong. I hope I'm pronouncing it right, not wrong. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. Who's, you know, he's been very involved in all the cosplay stuff in Las Vegas, and he was really great in getting a lot of the people in costume showing up. Anyway, so it was a lot of fun. And Jill Pantozzi, the Nerdy Bird, was there. It's always great to see her. And Rob Perlman, who's been a guest on the show before. So it was a nice night. And there are pictures on StarTrek.com if you want to go. But the more important thing is you missed that because you can't go back in time. No matter what Stamets and Harry Mudd tells you, you can't go back in time. But you can still go to the exhibit. And it was really great. If you're a Star Trek fan, you really want to check out. It's a really nice exhibit. The Liberty Science Center is conveniently located right near the New Jersey Turnpike. If you've driven from New Jersey into Manhattan, if you've gone into the Lincoln Tunnel, you've seen this building. It's the giant sphere.
Yes.
You know, you've definitely, anybody who's been in a car going into Manhattan through New Jersey or arriving from the south. So if you go to Newark Airport, if you come from the north, you take the George Washington Bridge. But if you come in from the south and you see, what is that giant sphere? What's going on in there? That's the Liberty Science Center. So it's a cool place. And Brian, I'm sure you'll check it out sometime before now and next May.
I definitely want to get it out there sometime.
Yeah, really cool stuff. So you know what else was really cool was this new episode. And, you know, definitely change of pace. I don't know about you, Brian, but I mean, coming off of the Time Loop episode, which the more I think about it, the Time Loop episode was like a gem. You know, it was just a perfect thing. Really fun. And, you know, had cool. It was cool because it was slick. You know, it had the Wyclef Jean song.
Yeah.
It had the cool stuff with the characters. You know, we learned that Michael Burnham has never been in love. We see her dance with Stamets. We get cool Harry Mudd in the Andorian helmet. And then you get a lot of action. And anything with time travel is cool. And then it ends kind of jokey, very TOS, as we discussed last week.
Yes.
It ends feeling like, you know, where's DeForest Kelly as Bones? You know, and it had a real a real nice button to it. This episode is quite in the other direction. It's a little, it's not as action-packed, for sure. And it had really more of a Next Generation vibe. I mean, they go to a planet, and what they think is going to happen is not going to happen, and there's trouble with one of their people. Although there is a little bit of a twist. I mean, I was thinking, oh, Saru's been possessed by some alien, and no, he just kind of flipped out, is what it is. So
yeah, I was kind of questioning how permanent that was going to be, but it seems like it kind of stuck with him a little bit. Like he just kind of regained his senses, but he still has that resentment there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, but they did a nice way. They explained it in a nice way, which is like, we don't know what it's like to be a Kelpian, this guy.
Yeah.
They kind of said at the end, you know, if you're living in constant terror and constant fear, you're going to have a different outview on the world than the rest of us, which makes me wonder what the heck he's doing in Starfleet. But that's, you know, that's not for me to say. I mean, it's we're still learning about the Kelpian a little bit.
Yeah.
So, so let's reel it back in. I mean, there were kind of two threads going on here. Number one was the away mission, and number two is some intrigue happening on the
sarcophagus
the
ship. Of
the,
ship.
Dead, the sarcophagus ship.
Yes.
Yeah. And with the Klingons and with our prisoner, Admiral...
Cornwell,
thank you. But... how awesome was that prologue? That battle sequence was pretty.
Yes,
nuts, right?
That was a great start to the episode. But there was definitely those two main threads, and I felt there was a minor thread with Stamets and Tilly, which I have.
Oh yes, that's
on.
Right. Yes, yeah, so two and a half threads plus a little half thread at the beginning with the prologue. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
But so between that, I think we have 2 2/3 thread.
Yes.
The opening bit was interesting because the Gagarin ship sees the Discovery spore drive in, right?
Yes.
And there's part of me that's still thinking, like, this is hush-hush, right? Because, you know, the rest of the timeline doesn't know about spore travel. We know that at some point after... We know that at some point during the show, this is all going to get covered up. And I'm like, well, if they're coming to save the Gagarin, the Gagarin's going to see them. I'm like, I guess that means the Gagarin is not going to survive this fight. And then a couple minutes later, I'm like, well, there you go. That explains it. So
I mean, you could also chalk it up to, you know, maybe they weren't paying attention to where they were coming from because, you know, they were shot at by six Klingon ships. So
that's true. And the sound effects are really cool. They had that kind of fat, squibby sound. It had a little bit of a Star Wars sound, I gotta say. The lasers in that first battle sequence sounded to me like that fat kind of flat up, squat up, you know.
Yeah,
sound.
Now that you mention it, yeah, I can hear that. Yeah,
it's like a squeaky kind of. I can't really do it, but I don't know that there's too much in Star Trek that has ever had that sound before, but it's definitely a Star Wars sound. It's not a knock, you know. I'm just saying it kind of got me off the couch when I saw it first. It was pretty cool. Yes, that opening sequence was wild. It's official, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that Captain Lorca's catchphrase is go. He did it again. it's a choice. I don't know. Are there going to be t-shirts with him saying go? I need to know. I don't know.
Maybe we should make the first official engage shirt.
Right? Yes. Engage, go. Yeah, scratch out engage and it's go. And we got to see a lot more of the new bridge crew, you know, the android lady.
Yes, the B team. We actually heard Reese. All their names this time, I think.
Yeah, we heard all their names. The guy's name is Reese now. He's sort of, I guess, the checkoff because he was manning the weapons. So, you know, there we go. We officially should start knowing their names. You know, I got to commit these things to memory eventually. So, and then, like you said, we saw them spore jump out of there, and Stamets is losing his mind. He's got spore madness.
Yeah, no, he definitely seems to be taking a toll on him. And it was actually pretty cool to see how it interfaces with him as compared to the tardigrade previously.
Yeah. Just plug it in your arm. But here's the thing. Let me run this by you. Remember, he exists outside of time and space.
Yeah, this is the one comment I want to make about this. I think you're going to say.
What I'm going to say, you tell me if this is what you were thinking. He looks at Tilly and says, oh, Captain, and then he covers up. So I think that he's zooming into the future or perhaps a possible other parallel universe or a parallel timeline. He or maybe the mirror universe. Remember, we still haven't
that is true.
Ever, we haven't circled back to that yet. So I think that he's slip sliding away in the time stream there. There's another realm that he visited in which Tilly was the captain. Is
yes,
that what you were thinking?
That's exactly 100% what I thought. Yes.
Yeah, which is awesome. Now, what I hope it's like evil Tilly. If we see evil Tilly, you know, lose.
That'd be
kind of
awesome. Yes, I would. I would actually very much enjoy that.
Best thing. That would be the best thing. I mean, we saw, in Enterprise, we saw evil Hoshi, and evil Major Kira. You know, we've seen also evil Spock, most famous, obviously, but to see evil Tilly, and even on an episode of Voyager, there was one episode where Kes, the little, nobody really likes Kes that much, but Kes was all right. There was a Kes episode where she turned evil for whatever reason. And you know, because she's, you know, a little, you know, kind of a little pixie gal, and she turned evil, and it was kind of fun. So Tilly turning evil. First of all, what would her hair look like?
I don't know.
Would it be dyed black?
Yeah, I was going to say black. You know what? Maybe it's like real shortcut, and it's black or something. I don't know.
No, you know what it would be? It would have like streaks of like silver in it. She'd look like the Dazzler, you know? and she would have like all, you know, she'd be decked out in like a robe or like a cape or something. Maybe she'd be holding a scepter and she'd have all kinds of makeup on.
Is this the Mirror Universe or Flash Gordon?
Yeah, I guess this is really just my head right now what I'm talking about. I don't know. But this is what I'm. If I was a better illustrator, I would draw this tonight on a sketch pad. I'm going to commission this from an artist. I'm going to find an illustrator and commission a mighty and wild Mirror Tilly. So, yeah. So hopefully that's the thing. You know, hopefully that's something. And I hope that you know, you don't just throw that in there, and because if he was just going to be confused, he would just be like, "Where am I? What's going on?" But he called her captain, and there was like a moment. You know.
Yeah, I mean, again, is this because we know her? Her whole deal is that she wants to be a captain one day. So, I mean, if they wouldn't have thrown that line in earlier on, we wouldn't have thought twice about that. So, I mean, I think there's definitely something to pick up on and look towards.
I think you're right. So then what's going on over on the Klingon ship? Laurel is back. She's got a scar on her face now.
Which looks badass, and she's got two colored eyes now, which I didn't remember if that was the same as before.
And, you know, by the way, the woman navigator from the... Kaylee?
Yes, she also has two colored eyes, yes.
Yeah. Did she always have that, or is that new?
I think so. I think they just never really gave us a head-on shot, with lights.
Yeah. A nice, close, tight close-up where we saw that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the new trend, is two different color to her. You know, it's be three. You get David Bowie on the ship, and you got all three of them. Laurel and... You know, remember last time she spoke in Federation Standard, also known as English, I said she had like what sounded like a Scottish accent. I don't know what I was thinking. Now she sounds Russian.
I don't hear that much of an accent, but I don't know.
It sounds, I think it's like, she's doing her own thing is what it is. She's invented Klingon. She's invented her own accent. She's like, this is what she's going to sound like. It's a little... maybe it's just she's doing Dracula. I don't know what she's doing, but she's
hesitant of the language, and so she's speaking in weird pauses or something. I don't know. But
it's just great. But it sounded a little Russian at times, I thought. It was really cool.
Maybe.
So what do you think? Do you trust her? Does she want to defect? I don't know.
See, I was going back and forth with this the entire time. I actually found this to be the most interesting part of the episode, was the conversation between Laurel and Cornwell. At first, I actually did believe her. But then I kind of got confused when they got caught in the hallway, because they had the line, you weren't what I expected. They both said that to each other, and I really couldn't tell if that was legitimate fighting or fake fighting anymore.
No. I think that I disagree. I think that when they said you weren't what I expected, that was more of their bonding.
Okay.
So that sold it more for me. Like,
well,
you know,
I mean, I couldn't tell if that was a bonding moment or that was... Laurel's like, oh, the jig is up, and then,
I gotta kill you now. I gotta kill you. Because we don't know if she survived. I mean, she looks pretty dead when
she gets dragged into a room of dead bodies. I mean,
corpse room, yeah. The morgue.
Yes.
Where there's like a bunch of just bones and sliced up arms and
there's
whatnot.
Half of a body there.
yeah, serious business. I don't know. I don't know who to trust on that, because I know that Laurel has or at least had a master plan with her buddy Vok, who maybe is still involved. I mean, we'll get to that in a moment. And but she seemed sincere when she said she wanted to defect because she hated Cole.
Yes, I agree.
And I think she does hate Cole.
But
you know?
That I agree with. I mean, she definitely, whatever her part of her plan was, that she mentioned she wants to blow up the warp core drive and take out Cole, get revenge, I absolutely believe that 100%. But she was very quick to jump on Cornwell, saying, like, oh, you're going to take me to your ship, the Discovery, right? And then I was like, whoa, wait a second here. That's a little too convenient.
Because if we're buying Theory X, which is that Tyler is Vok.
Yes.
Then that's a pretty nice layup. Bring me to Discovery and hook me up with my boy, and then we'll take over from within.
I kind of do feel that, but I still do think that regardless, she is not a fan of Cole, and you know, does want to have revenge against him.
Right. So she's telling the truth that she hates Cole, but she's telling a lie. She wants to get back on Discovery, hook up with Tyler reveals himself. Behold, I am Vok. and then they take over the ship.
I think that would be kind of a cool thing, even though even if we do pre-guess it.
Yeah, no, either way, it's going to be good. Either way, something's great is going to happen next week, because next week is the season, the mid-season finale. And originally they said there would be 8 episodes and then the break. And yes. I think that if this was, I think this episode was very good, but if this was the mid-season finale, the mid-season finale should leave us like,
yeah,
like you can't wait. You know, the mid-season finale has to end with, like, holy crap, what the hell just happened?
Yeah, it definitely felt like a two-parter to me, but this would have been a weird spot to break. It would not leave you wanting more, really, as much as you'd want.
Yeah, no, it should end, like, you know, they should end this mid-season with, like a oh, my God, I can't believe I have to wait a few more weeks. I'm gonna go crazy.
Yeah.
And I don't think this was it.
Official Star Trek podcast.
Energize.
So the other half of the story, and I would imagine, I think the bigger half in terms of screen time and the more resonant half, was the Planet of the Week, I guess you can call it, the way mission on the planet called, I wrote it down, what are they called?
Pavel?
Pavel, yes, Pavel. The Pavolvians, whatever they're called. They go to Pandora, basically, right? They go to Pandora. They go to Oa from Green Lantern, you know? They go to the living planet that's in total harmony. And now these jerks are going to make the Federation, the Klingon, come together. but what was the switcheroo was... So it felt pretty... familiar, and I don't mean that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In a negative way. In fact, I mean that in a very positive way, because there are still some people who are like, yeah, Discovery doesn't feel like Star Trek. Well, this really felt like...
Yes, absolutely felt very much like Star Trek.
Yeah, to the point that it just kind of felt like where's Dr. Crusher? You know, like this felt like really... You know, our gang is on, you know, Riker and Crusher and Data are wandering around a planet somewhere, or Odo and Kira are wandering around a planet. It just felt very homey, you know, and I think that's by design. And then there's the issue where Saru snaps, you know, and the reasons for that we'll get to in a moment. But the switcheroo, if you will, that got me was, I'm like, oh, Saru's been taken over by an alien being or spores. Like, you know, Spock went down to the planet and got spores in his face and in this side of the paradise and fell in love and became emotional. And, it happened many times in many iterations. But that's not what happened here.
Yeah.
Saru did not get possessed. He simply wigged out. He just, like... He kind of abandoned his post. He kind of committed a mutiny. Which is ironic because he hates Burnham for doing
the same thing. Yeah,
but he kind of had I am in a new environment and I'm going to mutiny. He did, you know, like the mutiny on the Bounty, right? These British guys who hated didn't know they hated naval life. They were just schmucks from Britain who were working hard and in miserable conditions. They go to Tahiti, where they can lay out in the sun, they can sleep with women all day, and there's no consequence, and they can drink, and then it's like, you got to go back to Britain. Like, screw you. This planet's where it's at. Planet. This island. And that's what led to that, and it's a phenomenon that happened. And Saru sort of had his own version, and... For a while, you're like, oh, Saru's not that cool. Saru's kind of a jerk. I don't know that, you know, I'm not really on board with this until that last scene, which is very important in the writing. I wonder, you tell me, do you think that they sold it? Because I got it on an intellectual level. I wonder if it really landed for everybody on an emotional level, which is Saru is not what we think he is. He's somebody who is in a constant state of being unwell, and for the first time in his life, he had a moment of peace, and he wanted to hold on to that. Did that land for you?
Or? That was definitely conveyed, and I think it was really driven home earlier on when the spore or the creature or being possessed in the second time. They did a whole like flashback of, you know, basically the summing up the whole show from his perspective. Yeah. And then he has that line at the end of like, oh, about fear, like I'm afraid. And I don't think we've heard him actually say that before like that.
No, we haven't.
So I found that to be interesting. And then that ties in well with his kind of resolution at the end when he comes back to the ship and he's in sick bay.
Yeah. I just wonder if there are going to be repercussions, you know, because are they going to rat him out?
I don't. I can't imagine Burnham being that type of person.
Yeah. And in a way, she's got a chit on him because she's like, "Hey, you know, I mutinied once, and now you did too." So.
Yeah. I mean, you can argue that one's a little more significant than the other, but
yeah. And I like that blue light poured out of his pineal eye. Right? It was like a third eye, and he's like, "Bruh!" And then he's like, "Hello!" And like the next morning, he's like, "It was like in a romantic comedy." When like a dude, it was like in like a very childish Will Ferrell movie or like a Jim Carrey movie where like the character finally has sex for the first time, and then the next morning he's got a spring in his step and he's like, "How you doing, everybody?"
Yeah, he definitely seemed
a little. It was kind of like, yeah, it was very very chipper the next day. Where did Tyler and Burnham sleep? They were in that in Home Tree in Pandora. They were in that little
They were in that little weird little tent thing. All three of them are in the same room. I mean, it's really just like a tent, right? That's all it was.
So I don't get this. So Saru goes off to talk to the blue light. He has his orb experience, right? He has his psychedelic freak out, and then he goes back and goes to bed. And waits till the next morning to tell everybody the good news about his experience?
Well, maybe it took him time to process, or he was working through the night. That's the impression I got, that is he mentioned they were trying to establish a vocabulary or something. So I kind of took it as like, hey, they need to rest, and maybe he didn't, or...
Yeah, no, you're right. But and also, did Tyler and
I was wondering Ryan? That, because that was a very third wheel scenario, especially if they're going to get left there.
I think they smooched, right? They had a smooch, but you know, I think we established pretty well last week that Michael Burnham has not been touched in an intimate manner previously by.
Yes,
person,
I agree.
Right. So I feel that if she was going to, I think it was a chaste kiss with romantic intent, but it did not go further than that.
Yeah, I mean, they have little like sleeping bags on a dirt floor. I mean, it's not the greatest place.
They didn't. If they were playing spring ball, I don't know what base they got to, but it was not, and it's also none of my business. You know,
that is very true
between the two of them, and it's not. You know, I'm not here to gossip about their love life, but I do think that they show feelings for one another, which is why it's going to hurt oh so much more when we discover that Lieutenant Ash Tyler is not who he says he is.
Nice choice of words,
because. When in this episode, there was a moment where I'm like, he's the guy he says he is. This is a red herring. He's not Vok. I got to loosen up and just relax. 2 minutes later, I'm like, oh, this guy's definitely Vok. Like, this guy's so Vok. So what do you think? Did your opinions change at all?
Okay, so when he touched that green, when Saru made Tyler touch that green stone thing.
Yes.
And he senses this deception.
Yes.
I'm confused here because he senses the deception of him keeping him busy, but nothing else. Like, that doesn't really work well with the theory. Unless, like we mentioned earlier, that Tyler is not aware of it. So, therefore, it cannot be read. Yet.
Oh, sleeper cell. Yeah, we've talked about sleeper cell
before.
That's the
only way that still works, I think.
Well, or it could be that Tyler... was deceiving. I mean, that's true. He was deceiving to keep Burnham to keep him busy while Burnham futzed around with that big sculpture.
Spire thing,
the,
yeah.
In the sculpture garden. As she was over in Storm King Sculpture Center, futzing around with the big crystal. So he was trying to detain him, and that was so present that it could be that he was hiding two secrets, but Saru only noticed the top-level secret, you know?
Yeah, he's maybe not... he just scratched the surface with it, I suppose.
Yeah, and then the scene when he's talking about, you know, I wanted to fish for trout in Lake Wobegon or whatever the hell he's talking about. I mean, it was very specific, you know? And I don't know what kind of data the Klingons have on Earth.
It's a good
point. Let's walk this through. If he's Vok and he goes to the matriarchs of Mokai, whatever the hell they're called, and he's getting his face changed and he's learning about how to fit in with humans, you know, they're going to give him a cover story, but is it going to be, I was fishing for trout in Squaw Valley, or, you know, I mean, you know, to what extent is it really going to sink?
I also think that's kind of like a cliche character trait, is the guy in the advanced civilization wanting the simple life. So I could see that being part of a programmed kind of sleeper agent kind of thing. but that was my con against the argument that he is Vok. But my pro for that argument is the story he tells to Saru about how he wants to make the Klingons suffer. And I think that's actually true. I think he wants to make Cole suffer, just like Laurel does. So I think that may have been some truth in there. I think that kind of pushed me towards, okay, yep, maybe that is it.
That's very interesting, because during that moment was when I was thinking, no, this guy is Tyler. He has been punished. You know,
interesting.
But you're, you know what? I'm an idiot. I was thinking on it on a very... very obvious plane. You know, you had some depth to yours. Much like Laurel, he hates Cole. He loves T'Kuvma. He is he wants vengeance. So.
But then, if that's the case, then he is definitely aware of his
case, yeah, then he's not a sleeper cell. And in which case, somehow that quasi mind meld experience with the green block. What the hell is that? Touch this green block and we will have a minor mind meld. So what was the deal? The planet is alive, and I'm with living planets. Ego, the living planet, Mogo, one of my favorite members of the Green Lantern Corps. I'm fine with living planets. But why was there this antenna that was just it was like their version of just like a cool looking, it was like Ayers Rock or just a naturally occurring thing.
Yeah,
right?
I assume it's a naturally occurring formation on the planet. as to what that whole race was and the harmonious sound and all that stuff, I have no idea. Right. It was a little odd, I guess. But I mean, that's Star Trek. I mean, you know,
it
works.
And
it still works.
They brought Tyler closer. They're like, we'll zoom you over.
Yes, they did.
I love that. And then they were like, no, get back to your ship. And Saru's like, I don't want to go. I want to stay here with you. And they're like, no, you got to go. Right?
They didn't tell him that. They just got beamed.
Right. They would have let Saru stay, I would imagine.
Possibly, yeah.
But then they knew what was going on, and they're going to be very proactive in trying to force a peace, much like the Organians in original series. When the Organian Peace Treaty was thrust upon the Federation and the Klingons. So shades of that to come a little bit. But I guess it's kind of neat. So the Federation knew that this planet was around, and they just had a hunch they could use this giant antenna to work as a massive sonar throughout the quadrant that would help them find cloaked ships. I would have liked to have seen that work.
Well, I mean, you're right. It's not working.
It would have looked cool. It definitely
would have looked cool, yeah. But you're right. It is not working because it's just the communication between the two ships. That's really all it was.
Yeah, no. The planet, the Pavlovans yeah. are like, no, F you. We're taking over. And which was cool, too, because we got to see a little bit of, like, first contact. And Burnham was pretty adamant about, like, we can't just do this without asking. And then Tyler says, no, we're doing it anyhow. And she kind of goes with it.
I bought his logic.
Oh, I did
they
too.
Said,
but
Saru said that we can do whatever we want, and they did it. So that's what they wanted to do.
I like that we learned that Saru is a fast runner. Saru can run 80 kilometers per hour.
And he went a little Hulk smash on that apparatus that Burnham had.
He did. And he has super hearing. And he could take three stuns to the chest.
Yeah, that was serious business. She shot him three times.
Which was part I was thinking, like, he was possessed. And then I was expecting, like, blue. I mean, this is because I've been raised on 700 plus episodes of Star Trek. I was expecting, like, by the time of that third phaser blast, he would go, and then, like, blue dots, you know, like, would swim away from him, and, like, finally he would be released, and he'd be like, thank you, the beings have released me, and now my true feelings can come out. I was being, being told what to do when I was possessed, and it never happened.
Yeah.
This is the great switcheroo.
This is another question I had, too, is, we see that Saru is very fast. We see that he has some strength to him, and he has some durability because he can take three stun blasts. What, on his planet, what are the apex beings that are hunting them? Like, what are they like?
Oh, God. Season two. We're going to go to Kelpia and find out.
Seriously.
It was also nice, I'm sure, took a note of it. I didn't get it word for word, but when Burnham and Tyler are having their lovey-dovey moment, they reflect on the, you know, goods of the many versus the goods of the few, which is a nice tie to canon and Wrath of Khan. But, you know, that's such a, you know, and also I think it was in Star Trek Into Darkness also, that it's such a... But it's beyond Star Trek at that point. It's like such a common phrase now. It's hardly even Star Trek. But that was nice the way they were worked that in. And it worked itself in unobtrusively. It didn't feel like it was forced. You know, it felt pretty natural. And it's good to see. It's good to be reminded of Burnham's Vulcan upbringing, even if she is a human. And we also got a really nice close-up of Saru's thumb with like a dirty, gross thumbnail.
Oh, I didn't see that at all.
It was toward the end. It was when he was banging on the, like you said, when he was Hulk smashing, you know, during that sequence. There's like a shot of his thumb. It'll be worth taking a screen grab later. Some other things I noticed, Laurel called Cole a dirty patach, which I thought was nice. Cole is of House Kor, which I'm pretty sure we've talked about before on the show. You know, Kor being one of the first Klingons we ever meet in TOS, you know, Cole and Kor being of the same house, I hope will one day factor into one another. But who knows? And the morgue, the all those bodies, that was like a Klingon abattoir. Like, I guess just Cole has a lot of enemies on that ship, and when he gets mad, he just has them chopped to bits, right?
Well, I was kind of wondering who those people were. Were they people that were, you know, with Laurel originally? Because she obviously recognized pretty much all of them.
Yeah, she was like, Parach, my friend.
Yeah, or I was possibly thinking that maybe they were some leaders of other clans that he didn't kind of have good dealings with, so he killed them.
I feel like they were people who were just not getting in line. We're causing a little friction. He's like, you know what? Off with your head.
Yeah, and literally. I mean, it was pretty gruesome.
So what do you think? You're a betting man. What do you think? Is the Admiral still alive?
Yeah, I think the Admiral's still alive. I mean, they left the shot... they left the scene. They ended the scene on a shot of her on the ground there. I think Laurel's kind of gotten a little. Oh no, because she went back to the bridge and they captured her, because he put the paint on her face, and they said, "Yeah, well, I see through your deceit." Blah blah blah.
Different deceit though. He doesn't.
So maybe the Admiral's going to rescue her now because they everybody thinks she's dead.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
That'd be a nice little turn.
That would be a nice little turn.
I'm sure there's a weapon laying around in that room of dead bodies she can grab, you know?
Sure, sure. Or maybe just the arm of a dead Klingon.
Yeah, there you go. Just
with all those spiky armors on it. Yeah.
There you go.
Well, it was all in all pretty cool, I thought, and it leads to, you know, what's going to happen next. I think this was an episode that was like a joiner, you know, it was like an in between two bigger peaks, which is not to say that it wasn't any good. It was terrific, but it felt like, and I kind of alluded to this a minute ago, and it's not a pejorative. It's not a negative. It felt like old school Star Trek. It felt like a random episode of Star Trek, which we have not yet had. You know, we had the prologue, the first two-parter, which feels very different from the rest of Discovery, and part of that is due to behind the scenes movements with previous producers, the Brian Fuller's involvement, blah blah blah, and then everything since those first two has been on fire. You know, it's been moving really fast. And then last week with the time loop was I thought a real climax. The more I think about it, I really loved last week, and this really felt like, you know, when I was a kid first watching TNG, I tried to watch it every week, but you know, maybe there were some weeks where, you know, my parents made me go somewhere and I would miss it and I would catch it later, you know, because
didn't have DVR back then.
And then you catch it later and be like, oh, here's some episode of Star Trek that I didn't see. There's Dr. Crusher on a planet. Okay. Like, there's that episode where Dr. Crusher and Picard fall in like a pit and she hurts her leg and they're just like hanging out. That to me is like the most like forgettable but still good TNG episode. And I'm not saying that this is forgettable in any way. I'm just saying that like it just felt like good old reliable Star Trek, you
well,
know?
Well, I mean, I think at this point we're still judging this as without the full effect of it. I mean, this is half of a story, really. Because
because it ends right in the middle.
Yeah. And next week we're going to see more, and I think we will get that, you know, oh shit cliffhanger moment at the end of it. At least I hope we do.
Right, right.
Before we break for the second half of the season.
For the holidays. But also, we're still evaluating this show in the phenomenon of, oh my God, Star Trek is back.
Yes.
And you know, we're 8 episodes in, and we're still evaluating as it's back, it's a new crew. Then there's all this, like, real-world stuff, like, it's streaming, which means, like, we have to convince our friends to watch something on streaming, which has been a nightmare. So I've been trying to convince my friends to watch it on streaming. And you know what, kids, if you're listening, this is the perfect time because we're about to get into the last episode before the mid-season break. You know, Discovery's going to go away after next week and then come back in January. So if you've been hemming and hawing and waiting and dragging your feet, now, this minute, as you're listening to us talk, you should sign up for All Access, which happens to be the sponsor of this show, and we got to the commercial late this week, but also the raison d'etre of this show, because of the show Discovery in America is on All Access, and it's only $6 a month, and the first week is free. So now that you've been hearing us talk about it, watch it for yourselves. Binge it. Binge the 8 episodes.
Yep, and perfect then binging watch time.
Yeah, you're in peak binge. Binge all 8. It's 8 hours, a little less because of the commercial breaks. Binge all 8 episodes, and then you can watch episode 9 live, so to speak, with everybody else when it debuts Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And All Access is not just about Discovery. It's about every other Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, original series, Voyager, blah, blah, blah. Plus other great CBS shows, Twilight Zone. You heard about the Twilight Zone news, right?
Yes. Jordan Peele is going to be...
Jordan Peele. I think the deal is done, or it was done enough that it was announced. Jordan Peele, of Key and Peele, very funny, and he made the very good movie Get Out.
Which I've been really meaning to see.
Oh, it's great. You should check it out. He is going to bring back the Twilight Zone on CBS All Access. So now, two classic intellectual properties, Twilight Zone and Star Trek, are on All Access. Well, I mean, you know, eventually we'll be on All Access. So there's a lot going on. And also you get live CBS. So if you're a cord cutter and you want to watch a football game that's on CBS, you don't have to go to the bar. You can watch it at home. Stop drinking so much. Watch it at home and drink a Pepsi instead. So that's what's going on at CBS All Access. You get your free week if you go to cbs.com/Star Trek, and that's what it's all about. So, Yeah, so I was saying, it sounded like I was negging this episode, and I don't mean to neg it at all. I really liked it, but the positive spin I had was that this was good old Star Trek is back in a way that has been, to some critics of the new show, that are, some critics will never like the new show, that's fair, but there are some who have been like, well, it doesn't quite feel like Star Trek to me. Like, this friggin' does.
Yeah, this felt like Star Trek.
Yeah, if you can't get that in the DNA of this, then I don't know what to tell you. And it has been a little bit overwhelming because it's all so new. And, you know, we have had serialized shows before. Deep Space Nine from season 4 on is serialized, but not quite to the extent that Discovery has been serialized. And it really is, even though this one does pump the brakes a little bit and it's a little slower paced, it's still just one story from get-go, from the first moment of Burnham and Giorgio on that sand planet. So, you know, it's definitely new, and we're still kind of getting our space legs, so to speak. So, yeah, this was fun. This was a good one. And you know, this is not the first Star Trek episode to have a Latin title. There was the one in Deep Space Nine, Inter Arnim. I forget what it was, but there's another one that has an all Latin name, and so this one does too. So there you go. So that's what's going on. Next week, who knows? Are we going to see some more Mirror Universe finally? Are we going to see. Is there going to be. I mean, is Saru going to have to face the music a little bit for his actions down on the planet? Is Sarek still in sickbay, or did they drop him off on Vulcan? I would imagine they did.
Yeah, I'm at this point, I'm thinking he's not there anymore.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
we saw sickbay. I mean, granted, it's a small room. I'm sure there's other spots there, but, you know, I think he's gone.
Yeah, I think so, too. Well, anyhow, we're going to watch it just like you, and this time next week we'll discuss episode 9. And then when the show goes on hiatus, we'll have some more stuff for you. We got a special guest that, Brian, you and I haven't spoken to yet, but this mysterious individual is going to be in our studios very soon. We're going to speak to mystery guest X before we watch episode 9, but we will air the interview with mystery guest X after 9. And then, you know, we'll have some more stuff. We're going to go talk a little bit. You know, we've been getting a lot of great feedback on the Facebook page, and by and large, everybody's, you know, people have been telling me their theories about Discovery, and get a lot of fan mail for Brian. One gal said, Brian's a cutie.
Oh.
I said, Brian's a cutie? You haven't seen a picture of him. How do you know he's a cutie? She just said, Brian's a cutie. That's exactly
I'll
what
take
she
it.
Said. But there was one person who said, who does not like Discovery.
Okay.
Does not like Discovery and said, you know, enough of this Discovery, get back to start talking about old Trek again. And first, I'm a little defensive. I'm like, F you, don't tell me what to do. But we are, you know, when Discovery goes on hiatus, you know, we do have 50 years of Star Trek to talk about, as we were doing for, a year plus on this episode, on this podcast. We have not exhausted the topic of Star Trek. I have one episode that I've been trying to cook up. It involves a special guest. Brian, you don't even know about this. I haven't even told you yet.
I don't. So. All I know about it is tomorrow. That's it.
Right. No. There's somebody else who is not a Star Trek alumni, but they are a very interesting personality and may bring some interesting perspectives to Star Trek. And that is something that I hope to record in December. And, you know, there's going to be more stuff. So, you know, when Discovery goes on hiatus, we are not going on hiatus. So that's the good news. So with that, I want to say to everybody, live long and prosper. Brian, thank you so much for spending your Sunday evening with me talking about Discovery.
Wouldn't have it any other way.
Oh, what a guy. What a guy. And let me know when you go to Jersey City because, you know what they had there? And it was only the one night. They had themed drinks. They had a cool DJ there also.
Oh, really?
And I had, they did, it was called Klingon Blood Wine. And so I just assumed it was wine. And the woman who was kind of running the event, she was like, hey, you want me to bring you a drink? I'm like, sure. And it was like, it had dry ice in it. So it was like steaming, kind of like, you know, mad scientist laboratory.
Yes.
And I hadn't had dinner. And then I had a second one. And, like, turns out the drink was, like, a mixture of tequila and rum and Red Bull and God knows whatever else
was
in there. I was a mess that night. By the end of the night, I was
So it hit you pretty hard.
I, I was not driving, thank God. So that's what's going on. So we'll see you next week on Engage. Until then, live long and prosper.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.